thanks everyone for coming. I'm going to kick off with our first meeting anyway on basically the tasks facing Amicus in Ireland. Alan McSamon there from Dublin is going to give a talk on the strengths and weaknesses of anarcho-syndicalism and the basic ideas of the WSM and how we organise. We actually did invite another anarchist organisation to speak organised, but they haven't showed up, so we'll fire away here anyway. So basically a short talk and we'll have a discussion and questions after. Alright?
Yeah, we'll just start off with what do anarchists want? I guess to put it briefly, to get rid of capitalism and replace it with a society organised to serve the needs of the many. Want to make real the old call of from each according to ability to each according to need. A socialism where everybody affected by a decision can take part in making that decision and where the liberties of the individual are respected. So how do we get from where we are now to there? Well, in the WSM we see our role as explaining and building support for anarchism. We recognise that the society we want can only be built by a politically conscious movement to the working class using its industrial power. As we see it, a successful revolutionary transformation is dependent on two things. Firstly, we need what's called revolutionary consciousness. By this we mean a rejection of both the exploitation and authoritarianism of the current setup and a desire to reorganise society in a new and better way around our own needs and interests. Crucial is the recognition that only the working class itself can make and secure the sort of revolutionary transformation we want to see. And following from that, only the democratic councils created in our workplaces and communities in the future will represent any authority in the new society. Such councils will be federated nationally and internationally to combine efficiency with direct democracy. No other centres of power will be tolerated, i.e. no small minority will be in a position to boss the rest of us around. And secondly, we need industrial organisation and solidarity to be sufficiently developed so that physical control over the means of production and distribution can be achieved and all remnants of minority rule abolished. Our ideas about how to organise and what we should be doing flow from this understanding. Now within the modern international anarchist movement, there are two major currents, syndicalism and what has become known as platformism. Syndicalism is a French word simply meaning trade unionism, but these days it's usually used to describe the idea of bringing together all workers into militant unions which have the explicit objective of ending capitalism and creating a social society. The early General Confederation of Workers, the CGT in France, was the first large union of this type. Today, the industrial workers of the world, the IWW, is perhaps a living example. Some syndicalists said that industrial unions were in themselves sufficient to bring about socialism. Others, like the American Daniel De Leon and our own James Connolly, proposed having linked political parties which would be under control of the union. Anarchists developed an anti-authoritarian version of this, anarcho-syndicalism, which the best historical example is probably the Spanish National Confederation of Workers, the CNT. Today, anarcho-syndicalists have a few minor unions in countries like Spain, France, Sweden and Italy, and smaller groups in many, many more countries which want to create such unions. Their tactics differ, with some taking the view that a few hundred people can form a union, and by the power of example, will eventually attract the support of the majority. Others create networks both within and outside the existing mainstream unions with the aim of eventually growing large enough to break away and form new radical unions. In the WSM we're certainly not hostile to anarcho-syndicalists. They share the same goal as we do. In countries where there are such unions, anarchists share the same type of politics as the WSM, are involved in them as well as in the mainstream unions. But we do make this point. Because syndicalist organisation is the union, it organises all workers regardless of their politics. A real union doesn't set a political test for potential members. It wants to organise as many workers as possible on the basis that workers have more in common with each other than they do with their boss. And historically, many workers have joined such radical and revolutionary unions not because they were anarchists or socialists or radicals, but because the syndicalist union was the most militant and got the best results. Just because a union has revolutionary policies and a radical culture is no guarantee that everybody joining it agrees with that or even understands it. The more successful such a union is in day-to-day struggle, the more it will grow. It's common sense. The union that's getting the best results in terms of wages, extra holidays, promotions and so on is the one people are most likely to join. And our fellow workers who might normally vote for the DUP or Sinn Féin won't adopt a completely new outlook on life just because they join an openly radical union. Because of this contradiction between trying to organise as many people as possible to keep the real muscle against the employers and at the same time trying to preserve within the union a revolutionary push, a revolutionary goal, difficulties certainly do arise. And because of these difficulties, reformist, conservative and overly cautious tendencies have always appeared. Now, syndicalists are quite correct to emphasise the importance of organising workers in the workplace. People who reject or criticise syndicalism on the grounds that it's just about people in work are wrong. Like, take the example of Spain. It's clear that the syndicalists could and did organise throughout the entire working class. You had the Federation of the Libertarian Youth, you had the Free Women Organisation, you had the neighbourhood organisations. Like, Spain in the 30s probably represented the highest point of anarcho-syndicalist organisation and achievement. Fortunately, it also threw up a major problem. Because the bulk of the syndicalists didn't see the central importance, what we might call the battle of ideas, they were unable to develop a programme for workers' power, to wage a political battle against other ideas, other currents of the workers' movement, like, say, reformism, Stalinism. Indeed, syndicalists seemed, and often still do today, to ignore other ideas more often than they would try to combat them. In Spain, this led to them getting sucked into supporting the anti-fascist but capitalist Popular Front government, which in turn led to their silence and complicity when the Republican state moved against the workers and peasants collectives and the trade union militias. A minority inside the CNT, called themselves the Friends of Durruti, was actually expelled in 1938 when they issued a proclamation calling for workers to take complete power, i.e. that the working class should not share power with the employers or the authoritarian parties. The problem for syndicalists is that a union which organises on the basis of your place in the workforce is not the same as a political organisation which organises on the basis of a fairly comprehensive political agreement about what we want and how we hope to achieve it. It leaves up open the question, where will the systematic explanation of anarchism come from? Where will the debates, the counter-arguments to other ideas in the workers' movement come from? So what's the alternative that we in the WSM propose? In a word, it can be called platforms, which is probably the most rubbish name ever in the history of humanity for a political tendency. It comes from a short document called the Organisational Platform of the Libertarian Communists, which was written back in 1926, two quarters of a century ago, by a group of exiled Russian and Ukrainian anarchists. We think it is, despite the timeline, it still has an awful lot to offer to today's debates around the question of how best to organise. And we're not alone in this. If you look at the anarchismo.net website, you'll see similar organisations to ourselves on all five continents. It's a multilingual site, not a lot of in English on it, with reports, discussion, debate, so on, from comrades as far as Lebanon, South Africa, US, New Zealand. The authors of this document, this platform, had participated in the Russian Revolution and saw all their work, their hopes and their dreams fail as an authoritarian Bolshevik state triumphed and destroyed real workers' power. They wrote the short pamphlet in order to examine why the anarchist movement had failed to build on the successes of the factory committees and the Soviets and the successes of workers organising to build a new society of equality and freedom. In their very first paragraph, they put it like this. It's very significant that, in spite of the strength and incontestably positive character of libertarian ideas, and in spite of the facing up to the social revolution, and finally the heroism and innumerable sacrifices borne by the anarchists in the struggle for anarchist communism, the anarchist movement remains weak despite everything, and has appeared very often in the history of working class struggles as a small event, an episode, and not an important factor. This is very strong stuff, a wake-up call for the anarchist movement. And we believe a call that still needs to be heard. Despite the virtual collapse of almost all other left-wing tendencies, anarchism is still not in a position of strength. Even though many of the Leninist organisations have either evaporated into thin air, shrunk drastically in size, or moved over to social democracy. It's a sad fact that were there a revolution tomorrow, the Leninists and the Social Democrats would still be in a much better position to have their arguments heard and listened to than anarchists would. This fact alone should give us pause for thought. We can't be complacent and rely on the hope that, you know, the obvious strength and niceness and ripeness of our ideas will shine through in the end and win the day. The world we live in is a product of struggles between competing ideas of how society should be organised. If the anarchist voice is weak and quiet, it won't be heard, and other arguments, other perspectives will win the day. Now, it's not my intention to go through the platform with a fine tooth comb. It was never intended to provide all the answers. There's gaps as to all new practical steps of any importance. It's possible that certain important questions were missed, or others inadequately treated. We can't get much into it, but I think it was like a 24-page pamphlet. Instead, I want to look at the underlying principles, in particular the problems which they identified in anarchist organisations, which they describe as follows. In all countries, the anarchist movement is advocated by several local organisations, advocating contradictory theories and practices, leaving no perspectives for the future, nor of a continuity in militant work, and habitually disappearing, hardly leaving the slightest trace behind them. Again, pretty hard stuff. Their solution was the creation of a certain type of anarchist organisation. Firstly, that members are in theoretical agreement with each other, i.e. that they share quite a lot in their understanding of the type of society we have now, what we would like in the future, and how we move from one to the other. And secondly, that the members of an organisation agree that if a certain type of work is prioritised, then everybody takes part in it. Even today, within the anarchist movement, especially in the English-speaking countries, these are still contentious ideas, so it's probably worth exploring them in a little detail. The platform's basic assumption is that there is a link between being coherent and being efficient. Those who oppose their ideas will often argue that this link doesn't exist. For them, efficiency has nothing to do with how coherent in its ideas an organisation is. Rather, they see it simply as a question of size. The supporters of the ideas around the platform would argue in reply to this that a smaller organisation is sometimes better than a looser one. A bit like if you're building a house, you put down the foundations, and if the foundations aren't spot on, the house will eventually fall down. It's the one thing that you don't skip on. So while an organisation looking for a higher level of political agreement between its members may start off at the beginning a lot smaller, we believe that it's building on a lot more stable foundations. We don't think that size is more important than ideas, because if you're not sure about the ideas, what's the point in a lot of people coming together to do maybe different or contradictory things? I guess this debate takes the centre of the big question. How does a revolutionary change in society occur? What can anarchists do to assist in the process of bringing such change about? Well, for us, capitalism is an organised economic system. Its authority is promoted by many voices, There will be parliamentary political parties, the media, the education system, many, many more. A successful revolution depends on the rejection of those voices by the majority of the population. Not only do we have to reject capitalism, but we also have to have a vision of the alternative that we want. What's needed is an understanding both that capitalism should be defeated and that it can be replaced. We're not negative, we don't define ourselves in terms of what we are, primarily in terms of what we're against, we define ourselves in terms of what we want. For an anarchist revolution to be successful, there has to be the recognition that working people alone have the power and the ability to create that new world. The role of the anarchist organisation is to spread anarchist ideas. Not only do we need to highlight the negative and injurious aspects of capitalism, which is probably pretty obvious to most people anyway, we also need to develop explanations of how the system operates. How does it function? What functions will we be looking to take over? What functions can be scrapped? This is what's meant by theory. Simply, it's the answer to the question of why are things the way they are and how can we change them? And we need to be able to do one more thing. We need to be able to put our ideas into practice. Because our understanding of how things work will obviously inform how we struggle for change. The authors of the platform saw a key problem with anarchist organisation in Russia and the Ukraine at the time, the experiences they were writing about, that the organisations were by and large incapable of developing such an approach, and even worse, that they often didn't see it as necessary. Because there was no agreement on the theoretical issues, the big ideas, they couldn't provide answers to the questions that people were asking. They could agree that women's oppression was wrong, but not explain why women were oppressed, i.e. is it natural or is it something that's, you know, fixable by human beings, you know, within our lifetime. They could agree that the First World War was going to lead to terrible death and destruction, but couldn't explain exactly what was it that led to such wars breaking out. So, like, how do you stop them happening? What forces do you mobilise to prevent them happening? For us, such agreement on such issues is important, because without it, cooperation based on activity, on agreement of what to do about stuff, is fairly unlikely. It's not enough to have a group of individuals meeting together if they're not united in ideas or in action. This undermines the entire meaning of organisation, which is to maximise the strength of individuals through cooperation with others. Where there's little agreement, then there can be little cooperation. Such an absence of cooperation usually only becomes obvious when a group is forced to take a position on a particular issue or a particular event in the real world. At this point, two things can happen. Either the individuals within the group just go off and do their own thing, which raises the question of what's the point in belonging to that group anyway, or alternatively, the group decides to bury their heads in the sand, to ignore the event, lest that sort of, you know, serious discussion and debate might lead to, you know, differences, and we'd sort of avoid that. Almost like where the group becomes more important than the objective it was formed to achieve. This type of thing has had a number of unfortunate side effects for anarchist politics. Most seriously, it has meant that the anarchist interpretation of events is still not widely heard. For no matter how large an organisation, if all within it are speaking with different and contradictory voices, the resulting confusion results in an unclear and weak anarchist message. Like, you could get enough people together to produce a weekly paper, maybe even a daily paper, but if each issue has quite different and contradictory arguments and explanations as the authors writing for it continually change, then the ideas it's putting forward tend not to be very convincing. It looks like the people either aren't convinced by their own arguments or aren't even sure about them. Now, I'm not saying that everybody speaks one voice, there's no debate or discussion, but there does need to be a basic level of common understanding, otherwise, really, other than for social purposes, why would people get together? The second side effect is that our ideas won't develop and grow in depth and complexity if they're never challenged by those within our own organisation. presentations. Usually the way our ideas develop is where, you know, one idea is played off against another and see what makes sense, or you adapt a bit of one and tie it up with another. But if you ignore the whole sort of debate and discussion, then ideas tend to stagnate and go a little bit removed from the real world. Without agreement on what should be done, an anarchist organisation remains no more than a collection of individuals. The members don't really see themselves as having any collective identity other than a long-term and distant aspiration to a much nicer society. And as a result, too often the lifetimes of such groups are the lifetimes of their most active members. There's no sense of building a body of work that will stretch into the future. Considering that in these times today, a revolution is a fairly long-term prospect. You only end of the year expects to see it by the end of the week, or the year, or in 5 years. Such short-term planning is a tragic waste of energy and effort. Often the experience of anarchists is that they are energetic and committed activists, but fail to make the link between the work they do and the ideas they believe in. One good example of this goes back a few years, but because of the numbers involved, it probably still is a useful example. It was the very successful campaign to defeat the poll tax in England, Scotland and Wales. Although many anarchists were extremely involved in this struggle, when the victory finally came, anarchists didn't come out of it, as you might expect, in a striking position. I don't think there were any greater numbers really in Britain had a clear idea of what anarchists were on about, what they wanted. The most maybe they were seen on a local level as good heads who did the work and that, but it's sort of like, you know, Mary was a good head or John was a good head, rather than, hey, anarchism is something we should check out. We could say the same probably about the recent anti-war movement. I mean, we need to ask ourselves why this is so. It would seem to be because anarchists are concentrating their efforts on making arguments against, sort of, if you like, the injustice of the day, and they sideline their arguments in favour of anarchism. They seem to see one as competing with the other rather than find a way to link them up. Furthermore, though many worked well as individuals, they couldn't give any sense that they were part of a bigger movement. In contrast to this, despite the WSM's extremely small size, when a similar campaign happened in the South, the campaign to defeat the water charges, and a very successful campaign, one that we'll be facing into here in the coming years, when that campaign ended, we had heightened the profile of anarchism in Ireland. We had emphasised throughout the campaign our opposition to this unjust double tax on working people was linked to our opposition to an unjust society that is not one in the interests of working people, and to our belief that a better type of society is not only desirable but it's very possible. Our numbers began to grow, so did our influence. The same happened with our work in the anti-war movement here. Now we're still a very, very small group. Our membership isn't yet into three figures, but we have moved from being a half dozen people to being a small organisation with five branches and a scattering of individual members around the country, and a bi-monthly paper that now prints 10,000 copies. Our annual Anarchist Book Fair in Dublin has now become the biggest indoor event on the Irish left. It's all still pretty small potatoes, but it does show like that, you know, small groups can move to being less small groups, and obviously then the less small group is much better positioned to start the real task of building a serious, large movement. Anarchism is still a very minor influence in Irish politics, but we do believe that our approach is working. Not as fast as we'd like, not as big as we'd like, but we do believe it is showing results. But the real test will be, over the years, can we make anarchism the dominant political idea, the most popular political idea inside the working class? And we have early started on that journey. Just finishing up by going back to the question of efficiency and size. All the organisations in the same tradition as ourselves agree that size is important. If you're going to defeat the ruling class, you've got to have a hell of a lot of people, you've got to have a hell of a lot of understanding.